An Easter Sunday Sermon by Reverend Richard A. Rem, preached at Christ Community Church in Spring Lake, Michigan, on March 30, 1997, entitled Disciples at Second Hand. The texts for the sermon are Psalm 118, verses 1 to 2 and 14 through 24, 1 Corinthians 15, verses 1 through 11, and Luke 24, verses 1 through 16 and 28 through 35. Copyright, Grand Valley State University.
As I was coming down the aisle, the ushers told me that they did not have another chair in this place, and that's why I had you kind of move a little bit. They said there wasn't another chair in the place, and there were people who were still standing. And I just said to Peter, this matter of inclusivity has gone far enough. That's what they say. Tell the truth and you'll empty the church. We're glad you're here. Soren Kierkegaard, great Danish thinker of the 19th century, Christian, theologian, philosopher, speaks about disciples at second hand. Disciples at second hand, those who live through an event having missed the wonder and the awe of the moment, but having heard about it, enter into it as best they can through the testimony of those who were there. And you know, of course, who are the disciples at second hand? Well, Peter and James and John and Andrew and Nathaniel and Bartholomew and the rest of the 12. And you perhaps say, well, I would have thought that they were the disciples at first hand, and then through their experience and their witness, we, learning of it, become disciples at second hand. And that, of course, is precisely what Soren Kierkegaard would want you to think, because he wants to set that whole idea on its head. He wants to say to you that physical proximity or historical closeness to an event does not mean at all that one will be a disciple at first hand. One can be right there and be dull of spirit, having no eyes to see, and miss it completely. But his point is not so much made that there are those who are at the event who miss it. The point he really wants to make is that there are those who are not at the event who have open access to it, because, as Kierkegaard would say to us, to be present to an event, to an experience, is not the matter of physical proximity or historical closeness, but it is rather to have the eyes of one's heart illumined, to have the fire of the Holy Spirit open one's eyes to see, to be surprised by grace, to have wonder wash over one in a moment when one says, in that moment, oh, I see. And that Kierkegaard says, to be a disciple at first hand is just as much the privilege and the possibility of those in the 20th century as those in the first. Now tell me, if you had a choice to make, not whether to live in the first century or the 20th century, I know you'd take the first century, it's simpler, but if you had the choice to be there when Jesus was teaching and healing, or to become a disciple at first hand through the inspiration of the Holy Spirit right here and now, what would you choose? I have a suspicion. Before you really thought about it very deeply, you would say, oh, I would love to have been there then. In your hymn books, hymn 460, there is a children's hymn And I think this children's hymn is representative of the kind of Christian piety that we have piled on people. This is what I grew up with anyway. I think when I read that sweet story of old, when Jesus was here among men, how he called little children as lambs to his fold, I should like to have been with them then. I wish that his hands had been placed on my head, that his arms had been thrown around me. I might have seen his kind look when he said, "Let the little children come unto me." Yet, still to his footstool in prayer I may go, and know that I share in his love. And if I now earnestly serve him below, I shall see him and serve him above. There you have it, you see. A kind of two golden ages. You might have been back there then and gotten a literal pat on the head. Or you can anticipate longingly that future experience of face-to-face in heaven. But I think that we have to admit that our typical Christian piety, the thing that has been conditioned into us, is that we are here now in the meantime, this in-between time, stuck at a kind of second-rate level. Oh, the golden age back then. If only I could have been with them then. Or one day, face to face, I shall see him. But for now, well, I can pray. And that is to miss the glory of Easter. That is to miss the present experience of the presence of God, full of grace, present to us in the living presence of the risen one, the one who is experienced when one's heart is set afire by the Holy Spirit. That's what the gospel lesson is all about. The two men on the road to Emmaus, going from Jerusalem to their village, 6 or 7 miles down the road, dejected, discouraged, disappointed, speaking to one another about those things that had just transpired, the shattering of their dreams, the crushing of their hopes, the collapsing of their world. And as they're commiserating together, a stranger joins them. We, the readers, know that this is Jesus, the risen one, but they don't know. And he says, "Why are you so sad of heart?" And they tell him they can't believe anyone didn't know what was going on recently. This was the one, they said, we had hoped would redeem Israel. And so he chided them for being slow of heart. And he explained to them from the scriptures the nature of that messianic task. And then they drew near to the village. And it was now near eventide. And they begged him to stay with them. For they say, the day is far spent. Come with us. And so he enters their home and he sits at their table. And he assumes the host's role at the table. He takes bread, he blesses it and breaks it and gives it to them. And then Luke tells us they recognized him in the breaking of the bread. And as soon as they recognized him, he vanished from their sight. He was gone. He was there no more. But they looked at one another and they said, "Didn't our hearts burn within us as he walked with us and talked with us on the way?" And they left that meal, which had become a Eucharistic feast, sitting on the table, weary though they may have been, and although eventide had come, they made their way back to the city with the glad news and sheer joy, saying, "The Lord is risen indeed, and he was made known to us in the breaking of the bread." It's a beautiful Easter story that Luke tells us. And I believe that Luke is simply making the point that was made last century by Soren Kierkegaard, that which has been the experience of every generation of God's people, who have come into a first-hand experience of awe and wonder, experiencing the grace of the present living Lord. It is that being a disciple at first hand, standing in awe in the moment, has nothing to do with historical proximity or physical closeness. It has everything to do with one's heart being set on fire in the moment when God's Spirit, the Spirit of the living Christ, gives us eyes to see. A moment that once we have it, we would grasp and freeze and hold on tightly, trying to preserve it and perpetuate it, but a moment, only a moment. For to be honest, most of us live most of our days as disciples at second hand. Most of us plod on our way from Jerusalem to Emmaus, talking about the stories and believing them too and wanting so much that something more would develop. But there are those moments. Can you remember a moment? Perhaps a time of deep grief, when there was comfort, or a time in great anxiety when you became awash with peace. Maybe the experience of an unconditional love in the arms of another. Maybe catching another's eye, looking into a child's face, seeing the craggy visage of an old saint breathing her last. Moments, just moments. Moments that we cannot freeze, moments that we cannot grasp to ourselves, but moments. Once we have one, which transform all other moments, so that even when we plod along our mundane way, disciples at second hand, we know of another reality, for grace has erupted and fire has burned in our soul, and we know the Lord is risen indeed and is present to us here and now. We entered this holy season around this table, and I suggested on that first Sunday in Lent that we look at the faces around the table. Even though the architecture of this sanctuary doesn't lend itself to that kind of experience, nonetheless, to become conscious of the fact that we are here together as a people and pilgrimage, brothers and sisters following the living Lord, a part of a community of faith, a community that is laced with grace and lavish with love. This place that we call home, with these people that we call family. And in a moment, we'll make that trek again to the table. And these aisles will become our roads to Emmaus. And it just may be this Easter that you will recognize him in the breaking of the bread or in the face of another, and your soul will erupt with grace and break out into flame, and you'll know the Lord is risen indeed. For you see, it is in that moment of recognition, recognition, knowing again, or knowing something that bypasses the brain, knowing something at this level, knowing something that happens to us that has already been a part of us, so that suddenly, in a moment of recognition, there is an experience of grace that anything that Peter or Paul or Mary of Magdala spoke of could not exceed. Sad and faithless hearts, leaping with joy, burning with fire, here and now. For heaven is not to have been there then, nor some future age. Dear friends, it's here, it's now, it's with these people. And may your eyes be opened, and the breaking of the bread.